Today we're down to the dedication of the wall. We have been following along getting this wall built, and today there's going to be the dedication. We've been studying the post-exile books, and we've been learning that it's a challenge to reestablish God's ways on earth once they've been compromised, to show us how big of an assignment that is. Just remember that God's been working on it for 6,000 years. This is a big challenge to recover what Adam and Eve lost or what was given to Satan at that time. So in Ezra chapters 1 to 5, we found that King Cyrus of Persia gave the Jewish exiles in Babylon the option to return to Jerusalem. So they had the option to return. They had been packed away after they were conquered, but now they could go back. And so those who wanted to could go back to Jerusalem, but he tasked them with the assignment of rebuilding the temple. And God had prophesied that 120 years before that. And so they went back to do that under the leadership of Zerubbabel and Jeshua, or Joshua the high priest. And we learned from Ezra that 49,000 families chose to return at that time. Excuse me. And when they got to Jerusalem, they immediately ran into opposition from the Samaritans. Now, we remember that the Samaritans were the 10 tribes of Israel. They had been conquered by the Babylonians, a bunch of them taken away. They conquered other peoples and took them from where they were and brought them and transplanted them over into Palestine, and so they became the Samaritans. And then when Judah was conquered and the people taken away to Babylon, the Samaritans moved in to the properties that the people from Judah once lived in and were living in them. And so you can imagine that when the King Cyrus says you can go back and take your places back and gave them the legal right to go back, the Samaritans weren't real happy about that. And so they had this legal right and they reclaimed it. And so it was during that time that they were having trouble because of all the opposition from the Samaritans of getting the temple completed. And so God sent along a couple prophets. One was Haggai and the other was Zechariah. And they were to encourage the people to keep building. And so in Ezra 6, we find after 17 years of struggle, the Jews were finally able to get the temple finished. 17 years of struggle to get this building done. And then in Ezra 7, 62 years later, King Artaxerxes of Persia commissioned Ezra, the priest and scribe, to take another group to Palestine. So Ezra actually came with a second group, and his mission was very interesting. He was to teach the people God's law, and that he was to see that they followed it and honored it. So that was Ezra's mission. And then in Nehemiah chapter 1, we learn that Nehemiah's mission was to reestablish Jerusalem. All right? His mission, and typically we think of Nehemiah as building the wall. And certainly that was a spectacular thing that he did, but that wasn't his mission. His mission was to reestablish Jerusalem. And it was much, much bigger assignment than just getting the wall done. But in Nehemiah chapter 6, we learn that they did finish rebuilding the wall in just 52 days. Now, when you think about that, it took 17 years for the first group to get the temple built, and Nehemiah and his group got 2.5 miles of wall built in 52 days. And so that was an amazing assignment or amazing testimony that they could get it done so quickly. And then starting in Nehemiah 7, Nehemiah began the task of getting the city functioning under God. And he did that in five ways. First of all, in Nehemiah 7, he saw that the city was protected. And he did that by establishing guards at the gates. He put a watch up on the wall in different points around the city, 24/7. They were up there all the time. And then he determined residency requirements for anybody that was to live in the city. And so he's about getting the city secure, operating, established, and he's not about just to let the guard down and leave it vulnerable. Second, in Nehemiah 8, the scriptures were read. And we saw that 13 men, along with Ezra, got up there and they read the scriptures for 6 hours in that day. And the people were brought under conviction from that reading. Then number three, in Nehemiah 9, 23 days later, because of their conviction and because they wanted to be committed to serving the Lord and on record for that, they wrote a written resolution. So they made a written resolution and that they would honor God and glorify God in this city called Jerusalem. And then number four, in Nehemiah 10, the resolution was signed by 84 leaders and was ratified by the people that this is the way we're going to live. And so Nehemiah, it does feel like he's making progress. And then in Nehemiah 11, the names of the leaders of Jerusalem are listed. And it appeared, as we were in Nehemiah 11, that not very many people were moving into Jerusalem. And we got noticing that there was several reasons for that. Some of them, that their family property was out of the city and so on. And so they didn't move in. And so in Nehemiah 11, it says they cast lots, and one out of every 10 families went in. Now, we don't know quite what that looked like, the casting of lots. I got thinking about it, and it could be they took 10 pieces of paper and they wrote 1 to 10 on them and put them in a hat and got 10 families together, and the one that drew out number 1 was moving in. I mean, it could be just that simple, that they were going to do that, and then they get another 10, and they draw the hat, and the one that got 1 or 10 or 5 or whatever the number was, it might have been just an X on the paper, whatever it was, if you got that mark, you are moving in there. And it seemed like the people cooperated with that and went in. And so the result was a population of 3,044 families had moved into Jerusalem. And if you multiply that times 4, that would be 12,176 people were in Jerusalem. Now, in Nehemiah 9, with everything in place, Nehemiah feels that it's now time to dedicate the wall. And so think of it this way. We see that, you know, you might have a big store open someplace and it'll be open for a while and then they have their grand opening. And perhaps during that time when they're waiting, they're getting their systems down, they're making sure that everything's stocked and so on. Well, that's what Nehemiah did. They got the wall finished, but he got the city working. He got the people populated and got them moved in there. And now when it's feeling like we got the cities going and it's going to be okay, he said, now it's time to have the grand opening, so to speak. And so that's what we're going to find today in chapter 12 of Nehemiah. Now, first of all, he honored the priests and Levites, and that's in verses 1 to 26. Now, I think it's just remarkable the amount of space that Nehemiah gives to listing out the priests and Levites here. In fact, it's just regular, it's very impressive. What we have in these verses is not the way we would do it. If we did it today, we would have focused on the political leaders and not the spiritual leaders. And we would have, you know, started out by saying Governor Rauner and the mayor of the city and so on and so on. That's the way we would have done it, and we would have said it that way. But Nehemiah didn't. And so think of what I want us to think of this morning is that the first 26 verses and then from 44 to 47 are kind of like bookends on each side of dedicating the city, and they both are focusing on the spiritual leaders of the city. So in verses 1 to 7 in chapter 12, Nehemiah lists 22 priests and Levites. And it ends up with this. These were the leaders of the priests and their associates in the days of Joshua. Or this is that Jeshua that we were seeing about. He was the high priest. Then in verses 8 and 9, he lists 7 Levite leaders. And then in verses 10 to 11, he lists out the succession of the high priest. And then in verses 12 to 21, he lists the heads of 20 priests' families. 20 priests' families. And then in verses 22 to 24, he lists 7 of the chief priests. And finally, in verse 25, he lists 6 leaders of the gatekeepers. So this is really an amazing list that he has here. And the thing that stands out to me is that Nehemiah was determined to keep spiritual things first. Okay, like I said, we would have gone with the political first and all of honoring the city and all that went with it, but he went with the spiritual things. And so it ends up in verse 26, and he says, these, and there's, by the way, there's 58 of them. These 58 men served in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Joshua, the son of Zodak, in the days of Nehemiah the governor, and of Ezra the priest, the teacher of the law. So there's these 58 guys. So that's the bookend on this side over here. And now he's coming to the dedication of the wall. There's no time stamp here, so we don't know how much time has gone by from the time they got the wall finished. But I'm thinking it was quite a bit. You remember that a lot of those people that drew the lot and had to end up in Jerusalem had to build a house before they could move in there. So we're talking about quite a bit of time has gone by as he got all this accomplished. And so it starts out in verse 27. And I'll read that. At the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought the Levites in all their places to bring them to Jerusalem to celebrate the dedication with gladness, with thanksgiving, and with singing, and with cymbals, harps, and lyres. So this was going to be quite the celebration. They're going to do it with gladness and harps and lyres. And then he talks about they went into the villages around and brought the priests in. And I just want us to remember here or see that a bunch of thought was going into this dedication. Okay? They're supposed to sing. What are they going to sing? Okay, somebody chose the song. Somebody chose how all this was going to be done. So they put a lot of effort into that. And then down in verse 30 it says, "And the priests and the Levites purified themselves, and they purified the people and the gates and the wall." Now, purification always in the scripture takes a cleansing agent. There's three that are mentioned. One is water, and or you can use blood. And without the shedding of blood, there's no forgiveness of sin. So we're grateful for the cleansing agent of blood. And then there is fire. And a lot of things that need to be cleansed were put into the fire if it wasn't leather or fabric. So, but the most common of all was water. And the way they did that was that the priests would go into the temple area, take off their clothes, and take a bath. And then they would wash their clothes, and I don't know whether they just hung them up, or I don't know what the order was. They had to wash their clothes and then and hang them up to dry, and then take a bath, and then hopefully they're dry to get them back on. Or they had other clothes, but they had to wash them. They had to take a bath. And then after they did that, then they took some of that water out of the big laver out in front, and they went and sprinkled it on the wall and sprinkled it on the gates. So this is a lengthy project. And I'm feeling that purification always involved a period of time, either to the end of the day or for several days. And I think in this case, because of what they are doing, it took at least a day for them to get their bath, get their clothes washed, walk around the wall and sprinkle it and the gates in an act of purification. It seems that on the next day then, they had the celebration. Now, I put in your notes a map of the wall, and the celebration apparently started at the Valley Gate. That's gate number 4 down in the lower left corner of your map there. And they started there in the Valley Gate. And in verse 31, it says, "I had the leaders of Judah go up on top of the wall." Now, again, we don't know how they did that. They must have had stairs going up. Now, it's 4 stories. It's quite a bit taller than up there. And so he had all the leaders. They went up on top the wall. Okay? And then he says, one group went to the right. And this is what he said, "And I assigned 2 large choirs to give thanks." Well, how large is large? I sang in an a cappella choir when I was in high school, and there was 100 of us in there. That's a pretty good-sized choir. Don't know how many people there were in each of these choirs. All we know is they were large, and there was 2 of them. They also had to go up on top of the wall. Now, remember, the wall is maximum of eight feet, a minimum of 8 feet in width, and they had this railing along the side there. So I don't know how many you could get abreast in 8 feet and still feel safe, four stories up in the air, and walk around this thing. And I don't know how long it would take to get all the leaders up there and all these choirs up there on top of the wall, and then get them in some sort of order. I was thinking of the wedding there. As the men came out, you know, we had a discussion at the rehearsal, what's the order that we ought to be in? So when we get there, we're like we're supposed to be. And I feel like that's the same kind of thing that was happening here, is that they had that. Now he says one group proceeded on top the wall to the right, and then he gives some names. They went over the refuge gate. Okay, that's down there, number five. Then they went with the musical instruments prescribed by David, the man of God. So one group went to the right, and they had the instruments, and they're singing, and that would have been really a glorious thing. But then it says, very interesting, Ezra, the teacher of the law, led that group. So we started down here in the corner, old man Ezra, he got up there, and he goes down the wall. He's in front of them. Then there's the half the priests, and then there's one big choir. They're following, and they're walking along the top of the wall. Then it says in verse 37, at the fountain gate, they continued directly up the steps of the city of David and ascended to the wall and passed above the side of David's palace to the water gate on the east. And so he's just following these gates along, and they're heading up for the upper right-hand corner of our map, or it'd be the northeast corner of Jerusalem. Then, so we had one group, big choir, leaders, Ezra out in front, they're going this way. And this works because that's east, so they went up and they went that way along the top of the wall. Now, the second group went to the left. Starting in verse 38, the second choir proceeded in the opposite direction, and it's amazing, it gives the names, past the Tower of the Ovens. So there's the Tower of the Ovens, then past the broad wall, we have that, and then the old gate, then we have the fish gate. And then they went past the Tower of Hanel, the Tower of the Hundred, as far as the Sheep Gate, and at the Inspection Gate they stopped. So the picture we're getting is that all these people are up there on top of this four-story wall. It's about 8 feet wide, and they're going along, and they're singing and rejoicing, and they have instruments, and it was quite a time. When they got to the sheep gate, or the inspection gate, they all stopped. So, each group traveled about a mile and a quarter. Now, they weren't in a hurry, right? I mean, this wasn't a race. They were up there celebrating and rejoicing. So it would seem to me that we're limited to 8 feet wide with all this. It could easily take in 2 hours to go this mile and a quarter. They're singing and they're playing and all these things were going on. So when they came together, came off the wall, there was a great time of worship in the temple. In fact, verse 40 says, the two choirs gave thanks, then took their places in the house of God. So did I with the other officials. and they sang under the direction of Zerahiah. I forgot something important that I need to back up. Nehemiah followed the second group. Isn't it interesting? Ezra led the first group, but Nehemiah is never about putting himself forward. He was up there, he was participating, but he followed that group along as they went. Now, we know that where the temple area is, that box up there in the upper right-hand corner of your map, that's the Temple Mount. And we know that that is a mount and that it's elevated and that the temple was up a ways. And this song leader, I thought about that quite a bit. If this group going this way is singing one song and this group going this way is singing another song, that's a little bit chaotic. But boy, if this group and this group are singing the same song, then the sound coming across the city would be just pretty spectacular. And so I feel like it's possible for this song leader, Jezariah, to have led them some way. Now, how would he do that? Well, we know that they had trumpets that they blew, and when you hear the trumpet in one part of the city, you were supposed to come there. So they could hear the trumpet. So he might have had a trumpet, and they're going to sing the doxology. And so the doxology starts playing on the trumpet, you know. And then the choirs join along with that. And then when they got to the end of that, and then the trumpet played, all creatures bright, I don't know what, he prayed something, and then they started that, and they could have gone around that way. Or maybe the song leader had a big flag up there, you know, and he's waving it back and forth so they could see him. I think there's several ways it could be done. But it just feels like it would have been so much more spectacular of a time if they did it in unison. And we do know that the choirs functioned under the direction of this leader. Then I got the idea, well, what wouldn't it have been something, particularly when they got about to the water gate and the fish gate, if they could have sang antiphonally? And that means that this choir sang part of it, and then this choir sang part of it, and the next phrase, and then this one sang, and this one sang, and it could have been just a magnificent thing that way. So I got thinking, boy, that would be fun to do. And so I called up my granddaughter, Ruth Newby. I didn't call her, I texted her, and I said, Ruth, I want to sing a song antiphonally at church, but I don't know what song to sing, so give me a song. And so she texted me right back, and she said, I think you ought to use All Creatures of Our God and King. And she said, yeah, I think you'll find that works very well. 2 weeks ago, Loretta and I sat in our living room, in our kitchen, and sang it. And last week, we sang it at Naperville. And so we'd like to do it today as well here. So if you'll turn to page number 64 in your songbook, Chuck's going to come forward, and he's going to lead us as we sing this song, All Creatures of Our God and King, antiphonally. Each time we have done that, I find that the first time through, it was a little bit, I'm not sure about all this. Second time through, it flowed better. And I think it's the way it was with them. Okay, this was not a haphazard deal. I'm sure that they had rehearsed this. And so when they got up there and this one group started singing, And they could sing right out in the next group. But can you feel the excitement that this would bring as the sound is coming across the city and you're praising the Lord and all the instruments and everything that went with it? And then the next thing they did, they had a big barbecue. And they had a bunch of sacrifices and they shared it around. And they cooked them on the altar there. And then it says very clearly, they rejoiced because God had given them great joy. The women and the children also rejoiced. The sound of rejoicing in Jerusalem could be heard far away. So just what a grand opening. This would have been fun to do, but the idea was they wanted to make it grand. It was to really exalt the Lord and to honor him and the things that they did. It would have really been fun to have been a part of that, wouldn't it? To be able to get up there on the wall and to walk around and to have heard that. So they had the dedication of the wall. And then the third thing then is our other bookend. He goes over officers of the temple. And picking it up in verse 46, it says, at that time, men were appointed to be in charge of the storerooms for the contributions, first fruits and tithes. From the fields around the towns, they were to bring in storerooms and provisions required by the law of the priests and Levites. For Judah was pleased with the ministering priests and Levites, and they performed their service of their God in the service of purification, as did also the musicians and gatekeepers according to the command of David and his son Solomon. For long ago in the days of David and Asaph, there had been directors for music and for the songs of praise and thanksgiving to God. And then in verse 47 it says, so in the days of Zerubbabel, he was the first governor, and of Nehemiah, the second governor, all Israel contributed the daily portions for the musicians and the gatekeepers, and they also set aside a portion for the Levites and set a portion for the descendants of Aaron. So interesting about this man, Nehemiah. You know, with the excitement of the dedication, you could get all caught up in all that detail and making all that happen and forget about the priests. But he started out, this is my focus. We got these leaders. He ends up, these are the leaders of those leaders. And they're going to continue on. So he never lost sight of keeping the spiritual first. Okay, I marvel at Nehemiah. It would have been so easy to have lost sight of that, but he didn't. So as we look at all this chapter and what's been going on, the spiritual rebuilding, it seems to me, is established by faithfulness to God. Nehemiah was faithful to God. Irrevocably committed to that. And in Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 to 3, says it this way, long ago, many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. But in these last days, he's spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he created the world. He is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature, and he upholds the universe by the word of his power. After making purifications of sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty of God on high. So what's the takeaway? And I think it's this. When it's all said and done, it comes down to a matter of individuals, like you and me, and our families, submitting to God as the King. In a time when there are those that are pushing off on the things of God, it's really important for all of us to make sure that we're honoring Him as King. One of the things that came to Loretta in my mind as we were talking about this 2 weeks ago, that, you know, when we build something, like we got the wall up, they got the wall up, and you could say, look what we did. Isn't that so great? And we could just rejoice in what we have done. And lose sight of the fact that what God is after is a relationship with us individually. Okay, He's not as impressed about what we've done as the fact that we're seeking Him and trying to honor Him and to glorify Him. And so when Loretta and I were sitting there in our kitchen talking about this, we spent some time talking about things that could get in the way of our honoring God like that. Things that we have or things that we've done. So I would suggest that maybe that would be something you might want to do in your family somewhere along the line in this next week, is just spend some time saying, what is there that we have done? What is it that we have that gets in the way of God, of us serving God and honoring God as we know that He would like us to do as a family? Nehemiah sure had it right. He kept everything in proper perspective and balance. And we praise God for that. Let's pray. Father, thank You for this man, Nehemiah. Thank You that he had his mission clear. And his mission wasn't just getting the walls up, and even though they got them up, and even though they had a grand opening of the city, he knew that there was much more to it than that, and he tried to keep it the way it was supposed to be. And it seems to me that it's always an effort on our part to not get sucked in. I like what it says in Romans, Lord, it says, don't let the world squeeze you into its mold. And it seems like we're not careful, but that's what happens. So thank You for giving us this 12th chapter of Nehemiah and for challenging us through it. And we love You and we want to honor You in Your name. Amen.